This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. England shirts back in the wardrobe? Okay, let's concentrate on the league then, shall we? And on this podcast, the Football League, to be precise. Where has the halfway point in the season looms across the three divisions? A third of clubs have already changed their managers. Not, though, the Sky Bet Championship leaders, who've undergone a dramatic transformation and given themselves breathing space at the top.
You know, the confidence is building. It was a big transition for the club anyway.
We'll discuss the contrasting fortunes of two of the former Premier League clubs, now in Sky Bet League One, with a man who captained both of them into the top flight.
To be successful, you need everything to be aligned. Everyone to work as one, everyone to be in unison.
And don't you just love a late bloomer? We'll meet the Sky Bet League Two manager appointed to his first league role in the same year he celebrated his half century.
I think the number one job was always something that appealed to me and something that I always wanted to do.
It's the official EFL podcast. Amongst the pre-season tips to get out of the Sky Bet Championship this season were naturally the three clubs relegated from the Premier League. But after major personnel changes, with Burnley slightly less fancied than Norwich City and Watford, however, 22 games in, Vincent Kompany's leaders stand 9 points clear of fourth place Norwich City and 10 of fifth-placed Watford. Let's talk to midfielder Josh Brownhill. Hand on heart, did you think it would take longer, Josh, for you to gel with all that change going on?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you always hope that when, you know, coming down from the Premier League, your eyes are always like, oh, I want to get back to the Premier League, I want to get back to the Premier League. And then new manager comes in, you know, some players leaving out of contract. You hear of rumours of other players leaving and you start thinking, you know, there's going to be a big change here and a big change of style of play and all of that. So, you sort of hope that you want to get back. But realistically, you know, it's going to take a while before you find, you know, you get your feet on the ground sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you found a consistency that the others haven't, because the two others I mentioned there have found decent form in little flutters, but then they go on a bit of a blip along the way. But you just seem to have been machine-like from the second you kicked off against Huddersfield Town in the opening game of the season.
Yeah, I think we've been well-drilled since, you know, the first day that the gaffer came in and what they told us. And, you know, they've put in a lot of work, you know, a lot of hours, not just on the training pitch in meetings and you're sort of going through everything and, you know, making sure that we know, you know, all our roles down to a T. And like I say, there's still a lot of improving to happen, which I'm sure come towards the end of the season, you'll see us in full force. And, you know, even now, obviously, we're in good form, but I still feel like there's another level in us. But yeah, I mean, I think consistency is key. I think we've got beat twice. We probably only look like maybe losing probably once against Sheffield United. Feel like when we played against Watford, we still had chances and in the second half more so to, you know, to take the game on and sort of get the win. But, you know, unfortunately we didn't. But, you know, I'm happy where we are so far. We look really strong. So hopefully the form can continue.
I'm smiling because I love how some of you guys, even though you've had this brilliant, brilliant season, are still forensically analysing in your head the bits that didn't quite work out for you and stuff. Can I just take you right back? I mean, when you do get relegated from the Premier League, and obviously you'd worked a lot of years to get up there, do you get any help with overcoming the disappointment? I mean, the club was going through transition itself, but I mean, what do you do? Do you just go and sit and mope for a month? Do you go off on holiday? What do you do to kind of get it out of your system and press your own reset button, Josh?
I have a big family and, you know, great support from my friends and from my girlfriend as well. So they sort of never let me get too down and stuff. And like I say, after, say, the first couple of weeks, it was a sort of exciting, the fact going into the Championship and wanting to get promoted out of the Championship, as I've always had a goal. Like I say, if I was coming down from, you know, from in the Premier League later on in my years or wherever it is now, it was always an aim to get, you know, to win a trophy and, you know, get out of the Championship. And, you know, unfortunately we got relegated, but it's a chance for me to sort of achieve one of my goals sort of thing. So it was sort of an exciting project. So
this is the human side, which is when you look at the people that left the club, I'm guessing you've got a few mates in there who you liked being with on a day-to-day basis, and all of a sudden they're heading off to Brentford or Everton or wherever they've gone off to.
Yeah, it's a sort of a sad thing to sort of see them leave after spending so much time with them, so many years. And like I was saying before, they deserve their move. They're really, you know, top quality Premier League players, and you know, for Maxwell and Ben Mee has shown going to Brentford, he's done amazing. Tarkey, Everton with Dwight, and you know, they're really, really good players, and you know, they deserve to be there. Obviously, it's a little bit going because you sort of want the good core people to stay and give yourself a good chance. But like I say, I'm delighted for them to be in the Premier League, and for us, we're doing well, which makes it a little bit more easier for them for leaving.
Being honest, when you've got bit of a Premier League legend, Vincent Kompany, coming in, even though he comes from the other side of Manchester, the one you started your career at, are you a little bit nervous on that first day when you go into the sort of group meeting or the one-to-one and think, wow, where do I fit in here? It's Vincent Kompany I've got.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I played for United, I was a City fan and my family's a City fan.
Oh, yeah, so they're all right.
I mean, my oldest brother's a really big fan of Vinny anyway. So for me, it's exciting. You know, like I said, being a City fan and sort of the Premier League legend status that he's got and how well he's done in his career. So it was exciting. But still, yeah, when new manager comes in, you don't know where you stand. And for a while, I didn't know sort of where I sort of couldn't really read him. And, you know, with all the sessions that he was doing, you go home, you thinking, is he having me? Is he not? You know, because obviously it's football, and football is one manager likes you and another person, you don't suit their system. I've come from playing one sort of way to a fully changed go to another. So, you know, you never knew where you were going to stand. And, you know, after a while, we had a little bit of a meeting, and, you know, he was just explaining to me where he sees me affecting the game, and, you know, sort of my role in the team, and, you know, wanting to be a big member of the team. And, you know, since then, I knew he was, you know, sort of happy with where I was at. And like I say, he's really good. He wants me to prove every single day. And it's something that is, like I say, when it's really exciting, because like I say, every day is like a learning day.
Yeah. I guess when you get that confidence boost of the manager actually taking you to side and you hear those words, I want you to be a central plank in this team, that must give you another 10-15% on the field as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And it was, like I say, for a while of not knowing where you stand, and you get that, you sort of know sort of where you stand. But then, you know, he brings players in. We've got a really, really strong team in depth as well. So like, as much as you might think, oh, I'm doing well, as soon as you take the foot off the gas, there's somebody raring and ready to come in. I think we've had a lot of substitutions this year that have come on and scored goals and done well, and we've rotated the team. And I think the team that might have started the first game of the season might be a little bit different now to where we're at now. So, you know, if you take 5-10% off, you know, the other person is ready and waiting to come in. And I feel like in this division, to get promoted, you need strength and depth. And I feel like that we've got that.
Yeah. How's he made you a better player individually?
Well, because I could go on for ages. I mean, he's sort of recognising my positioning, my body positioning, you know, where the passes forward are, where the players are, where the spaces are. So you got to think three steps ahead. Sort of, so I'm used to running around like a headless chicken and got so much energy, and they were showing me just stand still at times and be patient, and the ball will come to you. When the ball comes to you, where sort of where the ball's forward will be. And you know, he's improved me technically again to another level. Like I say, he's improved pretty much my all-round game, and adding more things going forward. For me, it was, I knew I could affect the game going forward, but I haven't done enough in my career. And you know, he saw that sort of early doors in training that I can affect it going forward. It just needed a little bit of tweaking and a little bit of confidence. And, you know, he gave that to me. And like I say, it's basically a learning day every day. There's meetings, there's one-on-one meetings, there's everything. So, like I say, it's a really good place to be at the minute.
You are absolutely brimming talking to you. It just popped in my head while you were answering me there that if you do go back up at the end of the season, end up back in the Premier League, then a season away could turn out to be as difficult as it's been for fans and all of you when you did get relegated. It could turn out to be absolutely transformational in the scale of Josh Brownhill's career.
Yeah, I think so. He's sort of got me back to playing at my best and sort of playing some exciting football. And I think for us, it was, yeah, we got relegated, but, you know, the confidence is building. It was a big transition for the club anyway. We're winning games. I think, you know, in the Premier League, it's so hard to win games, and dropping down and winning games is sort of, it's enjoyable. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes you're going into games in the Premier League and you're getting beat. And I think last year we took a while to get even one win, and you sort of miss that feeling. And this year we've been, I think we're on like 12 or 13 wins, which is, you know, which is good for us so far. And like I say, it'll build us confidence as a team going into the Premier League next year, hopefully, if everything goes to plan.
I thought as well, one of the most key moments of the season so far was when you did take your defeat at Sheffield United. Actually, the gaffer's post-match interview was so thoughtful, where he kind of looked at the skies and went, do you know what? This might turn out to be a blessing in disguise, because it's going to enable us to press the reset button, focus on the things that we might not necessarily have got 100% right, and to go again. And obviously, we're only a couple of games down the road since then. But so far, so good.
Yeah, like I say, sometimes when you lose, it's another big learning curve, and you sort of get to see where, you know, maybe you've got lucky over games and sort of paper over the cracks of where we need to improve. And for us in that game, it was a bit of physicality and crosses into the corners into the box. And, you know, after it, we've looked at it, we've improved, and sort of had the two games after with Blackburn, which was another important game. You know, you go into that one, and if you get beaten that one, you know, you've lost the first and second in the division, and, you know, it's sort of confidence. But then we go and beat Blackburn 3-0, which was a great performance. You have the break, you come back, and, you know, we do another one with QPR, who was second, you know, a month ago or whatever it was, and we go and beat them 3-0. So I feel like sort of the break came at the right time, as well as sort of the Blackburn game did, because we sort of realised what we need to improve on. We went out and put on a great show. So, yeah, I feel like with every loss that comes along, it's always a big learning curve.
Sky Bet Championship fixtures this coming weekend, then Friday night's Birmingham Reading. Burnley are at home to resurgent Middlesbrough, have won four of their last six. Must just mention that Coventry at home to Swansea, they've done a new rental agreement with the CBS Arena to see them through to the end of the season. Watford, who are fifth, travel to Huddersfield. Preston, where Josh started, currently sixth. They're at home to QPR, who have signed up Neil Critchley as their new manager on a 3.5-year deal. Norwich against Blackburn is fourth against third. Then on Sunday, it's Luton Millwall. And Monday night, it is Wigan Athletic against second place Sheffield United. Final question. You've had a few weeks off. You've mentioned how close you are to your family, your girlfriend, your wider family. No excuses, mate. I'm expecting you've got all the Christmas shopping done. Have you all taken care of? Even wrapped and just put in the bottom of the wardrobe, ready to be distributed.
Do you know what? I'm not so far off getting done, bar a few presents here and there. But I feel like leaving it a bit last minute and going in shopping in the last few days is sort of what Christmas is about. But yeah, like I say, I'm excited for Christmas. Obviously, it's a little bit different with football. Obviously, you've got to focus on your football and stuff, but to have a little bit of time with the family and, like I say, girlfriend and close friends will be it'll be a good few days.
You're an old romantic at heart, aren't you? So you like to take the pressure off and get the sort of bigger gifts done and then just go and have a little meander one afternoon and just pick up a few little odds and ends just to feel Christmassy.
Yeah, I feel like it's less stress doing it that way. That way you can enjoy it a little bit more rather than looking for the big gifts towards the end and you're panicking.
Josh, I'm going to wish you luck. I'm going to have to wish you luck for the game after Middlesbrough because I'm a Borough fan. But apart from that, I've so much enjoyed watching you this season, seeing the way in which the club has reinvented itself. Absolutely spectacular. Thanks for joining us on the Official EFL podcast.
Cheers.
Thanks, mate.
This is the Official EFL podcast.
It has been quite a contrasting last 10 days for two of the former Premier League clubs now in Sky Bet League One. Ipswich Town taking top spot from Plymouth Argyle last weekend. Like Burnley in the Championship, they've only lost twice this season. Charlton Athletic, on the other hand, are looking for their fourth manager in 14 months following the departure of Ben Garner. Let's talk to a man who knows both clubs well during their respective heydays. Matt Holland captained them both to their best ever Premier League finishes. But before I can ask you about those two clubs, you're looking tanned, you're looking good. You've just come back from Qatar. But remiss of me, who are you doing? Who are you working for over there? What was your involvement, Matt?
So I was working for HBS, Host Broadcast Services, working on their commentary. So covered 10 games, I think, in total, and went to another 4 or 5 as a spectator as well. So it was a hectic old time, but a very enjoyable one.
So once we'd got through all the initial objections as the tournament got underway, from a footballing perspective, and I'm not for one second pushing to one side the human rights issues that were being raised beforehand, but from a footballing perspective, did they make a decent fist of it? Have they made a decent fist of it?
It's been pretty good. I really enjoyed it, I've got to say. I was very fortunate to cover the opening ceremony. So saw the hosts in action, who were, let's be honest, a bit disappointing in the tournament.
You're obviously hoping to go back, by mildly putting that.
They weren't very good. Saw Morocco twice, and their support was phenomenal, absolutely brilliant. And their performances have been excellent as well, defensively superb. Saw Messi in the flesh. And score against Mexico, watched Brazil a couple of times, and yeah, generally had a really good time. And to be honest, I was a bit gutted to come home. I'd quite happily stay a little bit longer.
I bet you would, and then you'd be in even more stark contrast to the appalling weather conditions back in the UK. I hope you weren't like some of those England players who came off the plane wearing shorts. I hope somebody had forewarned you there was a biting chill in the air as you came down your plane steps.
I was wearing jeans and a jumper. I was alongside a couple of guys who were in shorts, though, and they regretted that decision.
Thank you for clarifying. Now, listen, this was not your first World Cup at all as a broadcaster in the media, was it? How many World Cups have you been to now in that capacity?
Well, I played in 2002, and yeah. I've covered every World Cup since. So, yeah, I've covered them for various different broadcasters since 2006 in Germany. So it's been, yeah, look, it's a dream job. I mean, playing is obviously the best. You're not going to be able to beat playing in a World Cup, but then to be able to cover it ever since has been pretty special as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously I was leading up to a question about 2002. The contrast in experiences must be absolutely huge, because I'm guessing you see the razzmatazz going to and from games as a player, but to actually be able to walk in and out, see the tremendous atmosphere, immerse yourself in the different cultures of the contrasting supporters, it must be a completely different experience.
Very different indeed. You don't see anything as a player, really. You see your hotel room, you see the training ground, you see the ground, and that is pretty much it. You don't see anything else, because you're resting, you're recuperating, you're getting ready and preparing for the next game. So you're sheltered and don't see very much of it when you're a player. As a broadcaster, as a commentator, you're able to see lots more of the place itself, get much more of a feel of the place and what it's all about, the atmosphere. And it's exciting mixing with all the other different cultures and different countries and being involved in that. And there's a bit less pressure when you're talking about it rather than playing on the pitch as well.
Yeah, I have to say, from a footballing perspective, just sitting here watching 4 games a day, sitting at home watching 4 games a day, then 2 games a day, it's just been a tremendous spectacle. Obviously, I didn't enjoy about 9 o'clock last Saturday night, but apart from that, it's been absolutely brilliant. I have to ask you whether you saw Roy while you were out there. Did your paths cross, Roy Keane?
To be honest, I saw more of the commentators rather than the pundits. So the pundits were very much in the studio, and we were going up to the gantry, and so saw a lot of the commentary teams. So Sam Matterface, Lee Dixon, Jermaine Genus, Guy Mowbray, all those type of characters, really, more so than the pundits themselves. Saw Ali McCoist, who's always good value.
And is brilliant as well at the job too. I mean, you obviously, you know, you were working yourself so you wouldn't get to hear him, but it's so effortless the way he works.
The bottom line is he enjoys it. And I think that comes across. And it's funny because going back, you know, when you're sort of transitioning from a player to working in the media, et cetera, you sort of pick people's brains along the way and you're asking questions of people and what works and what doesn't work. And I remember sitting with Andy Gray, actually, who was obviously a brilliant co-commentator. And his big bit of advice to me was accentuate the positive. There's always a goal that's scored, which, you know, the goalkeeper could have done better. The defender could have done better. You could have stopped it. But actually, how good was the cross? How good was the header? How good was, you know, the finish, all that sort of stuff. So his advice to me was accentuate the positive. And I think that's what Ali McCoist does. And the way he comes across, he delivers it in a positive way. And I think that's what people enjoy.
Can I just ask you for two football experiences? I'm afraid they are going to be contrasting ones. First of all, I mean, as we're going to talk about, and as I alluded to when I introduced you, obviously you scaled the heights domestically as a player, but would playing at a World Cup be effectively the moment, the thing you are most proud of when you were selected for that Ireland squad and then obviously played such a huge part?
I think it's the pinnacle, isn't it? I think growing up, you sort of watch cup finals and you want to be involved in that. And I always had a dream of lifting a trophy at Wembley, was able to do that, fortunately, with Ipswich in the playoffs, and we got promoted. I guess as a kid growing up, I envisioned it being an FA Cup rather than a playoff trophy, but it was still pretty special. And then I guess watching the World Cups, you know, my first memory was probably 82. And just watching the World Cup every 4 years, it's something special. Some of the great players that have played on that stage. And so to be able to play at that level is a dream. And then, of course, scoring in the first game against Cameroon, it was just something that, you know, you can't really explain how you feel. It just sort of is the best feeling you're ever going to have. So it's pretty special, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you literally, and it, I mean, we would have moved into the era, I'm suspecting, of more freedom of media, even back in 2002. Literally, do you go back to your hotel room and you find somewhere where that goal is and you just watch it a zillion, million times?
Not to be honest, no, not at that time. I mean, I've watched it plenty since, but you get the general reminder every year on this day, 2002, et cetera. But so I've watched it plenty since, but at the time you've just...
Do you set the reminder in your phone? Do you have that piece of video in a strategic place? So when you have the 1 week in advance reminder to do something and then 9 o'clock on the day of, it just automatically pops up.
No, I let people do that, Clem. I let people do that. I let others do that. It's great. It's a great reminder. And it's a great memory to have. But at the time, as I say, you're immersed in the competition and all you're thinking about is the next one. So that one's forgotten, and then you're on to, well, our second game was Germany, so that was our thought process, really.
Yeah. In stark contrast, I have to ask you, you obviously did take a penalty as part of the round of 16 defeat to Spain. Not quite the same as what Harry Kane went through on Saturday night in real time in play, but when you are standing there with time to think about it, and you know that the eyes and hearts of a nation are on you, I'm trying to imagine, as you stand there in that place, how you're processing it, what is going through you, what the little chatterbox on your shoulder is saying to you.
Well, I wasn't thinking about getting a pizza advert, and it didn't materialize afterwards. what was I thinking about? To be honest, I only took 8 penalties in my career. All in shootouts. I didn't take them in game. I scored 7 and missed 1. And that's the only one I missed. And it's the only one that I put my foot through and blasted. The other 7 I placed. We'd practiced them the day before. We'd done quite an extensive practice the day before. We didn't have a set 5 penalty takers. It was literally at the end of the game, Mick McCarthy saying who fancied one, who wanted to take one. I felt pretty confident. I'd had a good tournament and felt good in myself about taking one. But the day before, all the penalties I'd taken, I put my foot through, and I'd made my mind up that that's what I was going to do, regardless of you know, how I felt at the time. I was just going to put my foot through it. And that, and so knowing my time was coming, I was just thinking about getting a good contact, clean contact, and putting it down the middle. And did that, but got too much of it and maybe leant back slightly too much, hit the bar, and the rest is history. And it is the worst. It is absolutely the worst feeling you're ever going to have. So much so that afterwards, so I got taken for a drugs test after the game as well. So it was myself.
Oh, my goodness.
So literally not even able to go back to the dressing room. Myself and Robbie were in the drugs testing room for a good couple of hours because it was a hot tournament. And so very dehydrated, weren't able to go and provide a specimen. So that took ages. But the team stayed, waited for us, which was brilliant. They could easily have gone and we could have got a car back to the hotel, but we were all in it together. Got back to the hotel room, phoned home. My wife and kids had come out for the first two games, but then had gone home. So was in tears in the room to them, and put the phone down. And then my door went. There was a knock on the door, and it was Kevin Kilbanner, who'd missed one himself in the shootout. And he said, "Come on, we're going out." I said, No. I said, I can't think about going out now. He said, "No, we're definitely, come on, we're going out. The whole team are going out, where everyone's going. You've got to come." I said, "No." I said, I'm gutted. Anyway, he dragged me out, and I will forever be grateful for that, really, because easily I could have sat in that hotel room and been despondent, been down about it. And I was still despondent about it. The next morning, I'm still despondent about it now, but I'll be forever grateful for that camaraderie and that you know, real team ethic that Kevin showed by dragging me out the room.
Yeah, I thank you for sharing. I mean, amazing contrast in emotions, relevant because of what Harry Kane is currently going through, based on what you just said, that it's probably never going to leave him. Let's be perfect.
No, it won't. Honestly, it won't leave him. It'll always be there. It does ease slightly over the years, but I always look back and think, I wish I'd placed it.
Yeah, but if you'd placed it and done it a bit more floppy, and
he might have saved it, who knows?
And then everybody would be saying, "Oh, for goodness sake, why don't you just smack it one?" Lest we forget, about an hour and three quarters ago when I introduced you, the peg to get you on was to benefit from your vast knowledge and experience of Ipswich Town and Charlton Athletic. I mean, first of all, just looking at your social media, your affiliations appear to be in Suffolk over South London these days, or have I misinterpreted that?
No. So I live much closer to Ipswich. I'm sort of about 18 miles away from the ground, so not far at all. And obviously the ability to get to Ipswich is far easier for me than it is to get to Charlton. I'm actually an ambassador now for Ipswich Town. So that's been announced sort of in the last 6 weeks, 8 weeks, something like that.
Does that get you Ed Sheeran's phone number or not?
Do you know, I haven't met Ed yet. I haven't met him, but I'm working on it. He's got a box at the ground, so he's a season ticket holder and he comes to all the games. So, but I think there's a queue of people who are waiting to see Ed. So I might have to wait my turn.
I'll tell you this: I bet he wants to meet you.
No, I bet he doesn't even know who I am. I bet he's too young to remember me.
Not a chance. Although I do have to tell you, my 12-year-old niece, as we sat watching England France together on Saturday night, had not heard of David Beckham. I'll just leave that one hanging in the air, if that's okay. But anyway, please continue.
Yeah, so over the last sort of 18 months, there's a new ownership model taken over at Ipswich, and Mark Ashton's got is the chief executive, and you know, we've sort of built up a good relationship over that period of time. We're trying to build the former Players Association and make that a much stronger unit at the club, because I think it's important that the former players are remembered and utilised in a positive way at every football club. So we've been doing quite a bit of work behind the scenes. Anyway, he's asked myself and Simon Milton to become ambassadors and sort of take on a role that will try and involve the former players much more heavily at the club going forward. And it's been good to be around. Kieran McKenna's doing a fantastic job, honestly. Being able to be in a privileged position to have gone down to the training ground and watched him work and watch him coach. The players are are very motivated by what he's doing.
Matt, can you give us a little insight into that as you stood there? I mean, is he a watcher? Is he a...
He's
right in the thick of it.
He's right in the thick of it. He loves being on the grass. He loves coaching. And actually, I love sort of talking and picking the brains of people like Kieran. And when he was at Man United, I think he did the majority of the coaching. Well, he did do the majority of the coaching, just talking to him. And he said he never did the same session twice. He said it's important that the players come in maybe not knowing what they're expected, what they're going to do on a certain day, and be motivated by different sessions. And so he said he never did the same session twice. His sessions are short, sharp, and organised. They're brilliant, to be honest. You know, you can see the patterns of play that he's working on during the week coming out on a Saturday. You can just envisage exactly what he's done in training on a Monday, on a Tuesday, and a Wednesday. On a Saturday, it all comes to fruition. He is an excellent coach, and it's been a pleasure watching him.
Yeah. So to that end, do we put Ipswich's success, well, really, since he took over, down to one man, or does the off-the-field environment with the ownership regime, with a decent chief executive, does that set a comfortable tone that allows the head coach to then do what they need to do?
To be successful, you need a bit of everything. You need everything to come together. Look, the most important thing at any football club is what happens on the grass on a Saturday. If they're performing on a Saturday, getting results and scoring goals and playing some attractive football, then the other stuff can go with it as well. But when you look at the crowds, I think this season they're averaging over 25,000. And we're talking about a team in League One here, averaging over 25,000. When I first joined Ipswich in 97, I think our average gate was about 12,000. And we were towards the top end of the Championship. So you're talking, you know, where are we now? 25 years on.
Yeah.
Team in League One and averaging over 25,000. It's frightening what's going on. There's money being spent on the ground. There's money being spent on the training ground. There's money being spent on the team, investment in bringing players to the club. And I think that the fans are enjoying the ride. They're enjoying what's happening, because I think over the sort of a 10-year period, it's been neglected in many ways. In many areas of the football club, it's been neglected. And you know, there was a lot of work that needed doing. And it is happening. It's not a quick process. It's a slow process. It's going to take time to build it to where Mark Ashton and his team want it to get to. But it's important that that's right off the field. And it's important that things are right on the field. And I think in Kieran McKenna, they've got the perfect coach.
I was just looking back, to be clear, on the sort of seasons that have gone by. And just to underline what you're saying about those attendances, it's the fourth season in League One, and it is the 21st season since relegation from the Premier League. So there is clearly something very powerful happening in those parts. In the opposite corner are a team described by their supporters' trust as at the lowest ebb in living memory. And when we look at those managerial stats, do we have to look beyond the manager here, Matt? Because if you think about it, we've gone from experienced head in Nigel Adkins, lots of promotions on his CV, to giving it to the young homegrown in Johnny Jackson who comes through, to picking a guy highly rated in Ben Garner who'd taken Swindon into the playoffs last season, and none of those approaches have worked.
Yeah, it is a total contrast to what's happening at Ipswich. You know, to be successful, you need everything to be aligned. You need everyone to work as one, everything to be in unison. And that clearly isn't the case at Charlton at the moment. They've had some tough times with previous owners. Obviously, Thomas Sangard now is in charge. And there was clearly a breakdown in the relationship with Ben Garner. I think that had been brewing. It felt like it had been brewing for a few weeks. Some of the post-match comments from Ben Garner were quite damning, in the fact that he felt he hadn't been backed as he was supposedly promised. Okay. So once that starts becoming public, then obviously you fear for the manager's future. And of course, he has paid the price. And now they're looking for another new manager. I don't know whether the club is for sale or could be sold.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because I will not even hint at who it was, but I've spoken to somebody who I suppose might be a credible, well, would definitely be a credible candidate, but I think their concerns would be that the uncertainty about the future of the club. And this is a club that's, with Thomas Sandegaard, is not just owned by him, he's the chief executive and the sole director, which again, is anybody offering him alternative opinion and questioning sometimes, which we all need that regulation, Matt, don't we? We can't be an island.
No, absolutely. I think, you can't be right about everything, and you need help, and you need to grow a team around you that you can trust to do stuff when you can't necessarily give the club the attention that you want to give it. So absolutely, you need a good team around you. And maybe at times he perhaps hasn't necessarily got that at the club, and people to be in his ear and give him advice. And what I can say is it's an unbelievable club. The size of the club, you feel as though it's an attractive job to somebody. I don't think they'll be short on offers of managers out of work keen to get involved and take over at Charlton. Because,
well, except if there is that precariousness over where the club is going to be sold, because nobody's going to want to put their yayas on the line if they're going to find that, you know, 2 months down the line, a new broom comes in and goes, I tell you what, thanks very much, but you're not my cup of tea. We want to go our own route. So that uncertainty leaves the club in a precarious position, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. And you know, listening to some of the owner's comments, he's saying that this is going to take weeks rather than days to find a new manager. It's not something that, you know, there might be lots of people who are keen to take the job. But as you say, the situation at the club at the moment and where it's at, it makes it a more difficult appointment. I guess it would be as a manager going into that environment, you would want assurances of where you're going. But then Ben Garner felt as though he was given assurances in the summer, and they haven't come to fruition as well. I think the bottom line is, as a manager, you need time and you need resources. And at the moment, Charlton haven't been given time to some of their managers. I don't think any of the appointments that he's made have lasted more than 7 months. So you're not getting the time that you need to try and make an impact and try and make a long-standing impact at a club as well.
And just to underline Charlton Athletic's plight, this is the sixth season out of seven at this level for the first time in approaching nearly a century. They're currently 18th in the table. They finish below 17th. It will be their lowest ever finishing position. Full range of Sky Bet League One fixtures this coming weekend. On Saturday, 3 o'clock kickoffs, 4th place Barnsley at home to Burton, 5th place Bolton are at home to Exeter, Charlton are at home to Bristol Rovers, 6th place Peterborough United home to Shrewsbury Town, Plymouth 2nd, 3 points from their last possible 12, which has contributed to allowing Ipswich to go top. They're at home to bottom club Morecambe, only 2 wins all season for them. MK Dons travel to Portsmouth, sacked Liam Manning during the week. 4 league wins in 20, only 15 points from a possible 60. Sheffield Wednesday, who are 3rd, are at home to Oxford, and Ipswich travel to Wickham. I don't suppose yours and, I haven't looked at this, I don't suppose yours and Liam's paths remotely crossed with his roles in the Ipswich Town Academy over the years, don't they?
Yeah. I know Liam. Yeah. I know Liam. He was at the club when I was there. So I do know him, yeah. And his assistant, or his coach, is George Burley's son-in-law as well.
His assistant being Chris Hogg. Chris Hogg. I wonder, I mean, obviously we should mention some quite high-profile departures from MK Dons probably contributed to the current situation. Well, undoubtedly did. And then just sometimes, in the same way as you can have positive momentum in football, Matt, presumably, if you get stuck in a rut, it can be hard to get out of it.
Yeah, I think, crikey, I mean, they did superbly last season. And you know, the job that Liam did, you know, it was a fantastic one. But they have lost some key players. And I think their budget as well, if you look at their budget compared in League One, it's one of the lowest in the league. It's not a big budget. So when you're dealing with that, you know, it's difficult. And, you know, the expectation levels that have been built up over the previous seasons have been such that it's been difficult to try and replicate that this season. And you're right, when you are on that sort of a run, it's difficult to get yourself out of it. And you feel as though every little thing that goes wrong or can go wrong does go wrong. And I think that's the position that they found themselves in. But Liam's a good coach and he'll be back, no doubt about that.
And, you know, Ipswich moving top, you would expect them to be occupying one of those automatic promotion places, would you, minimum, come the end of the season?
I hope so. That's the plan. That's the plan, absolutely. I think there's, at the moment, it looks like two from three, doesn't it? To get those automatic spaces. I know they've had a few injuries to contend with, and most clubs, well, all clubs get that over the course of a season. But January's around the corner, and I'm sure that they'll be looking to be proactive and look to try and bring a couple in, which will further strengthen our chances of getting promoted. So, yeah, fingers crossed that we can be one of those two teams.
Wonderful to talk to you. You've got no excuse for the Christmas shopping, mate. You're back a good couple of weeks before the big day. So I trust you use your time wisely and make sure none of the family are let down.
I'll do my best.
Sunday or wherever Christmas Day is. Don't have to worry about me, though. Just being in your presence is enough of a Christmas present, mate. Great to talk to you, mate. Thanks, Mark.
You too, Glenn. It's been a pleasure.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Tennant.
Our final guest this week is proof that in life we never know what is round the corner. By my reckoning, his playing career involved 22 non-league moves, and his path to his appointment as head coach at Sky Bet League 2 Swindon Town in the summer took Scott Lindsay on a journey via setting up development centres, an under-18s role, and several jobs as an EFL assistant manager. Warning, Scott, I am going to mention your age at this point, so I'd rather just put it out there softly so you can get used to it. I guess it all of that setup rather begs the question whether even as you approached your 50th year, running a first team was on your radar.
Hi, Clem. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think obviously with the amount of roles that I've done throughout my coaching career, I think the number one job was always something that appealed to me and something that I always wanted to do. I always felt that maybe I'd never get the opportunity, you know. I think that, you know, you get used to serving other managers as their assistants and first team coaches and even youth team coaches, you know, and you feel that maybe I'm going to miss the boat on that and not get the opportunity. But out of nowhere in the summer, obviously Ben moved on to Charlton, and then I got a call for me to step up to do that job. And of course, you know, I was always going to do it. You know, I backed myself. I've learned a lot throughout the years, throughout the different roles I've had. So yeah, I was really pleased to take on the role.
Yeah, I love sort of career path stories. I talk to lots of people in the various roles that I do, and I love this kind of ebbs and flows of life and where suddenly out of the blue, one moment can have an enormous impact. I mean, listen, you come from a football family because your old man used to play?
Yeah, my dad was a pro back in the 60s and the 70s. His brother, my uncle, was also a pro. Same sort of era. So yeah, so you know, being brought up in a football house. I remember, you know, years ago going to watch Liverpool. We were big Liverpool fans, me and my brother. We went to watch Liverpool play at the old showground at Scunthorpe where we were brought up, and my dad got us tickets, and we couldn't believe the fact that we were going to watch Liverpool play. And then after the game, my dad took us down to meet some of the players, and wow. Ray Clements and Kevin Keegan both come out the players' entrance and recognise my dad. And
because, of course, well, wait a second. Ray was certainly at Scunthorpe. Was Kevin at Scunthorpe as well? Initially? He was, wasn't
he?
Yeah.
So they both knew my father from playing with him years previous to this at Scunthorpe United. Me and my brother didn't know this. We just couldn't believe the fact that my dad knew Kevin Keegan and Ray Clements. We'd come away baffled by it. And it was really only then that we found out that my dad was a professional footballer.
Wow.
you know, so my dad was my hero anyway, but he was even more so after that, you know. And then that was it. We were hooked, and both me and my brother, you know, we were really into our football.
Yeah, but I'm looking through the list of clubs, and they're a giant panacea of every non-league name you've ever. Goole Town, Stafford Rangers, obviously Burton have subsequently come in the league, Sutton Coal. I mean, I no offence to anybody I haven't mentioned, but we'd have to extend the podcast length by an hour if I reeled the list off. Does that mean at that time you're supplementing your playing time by doing a full-time job, a part-time job? Is that the path you've come?
No, I mean, I've like literally always been in football, you know.
So all those non-league roles all paid enough to see you through to be professional?
I didn't need a lot of money, Clem, to be honest with you. But yeah, I mean, until sort of like moving down to Gillingham, 1994, I'd lived at home sort of thing. So all them non-league clubs that previous to that was, I was living at home with mum and dad, and then in 1994, moved down to Kent and signed my first professional contract with Gillingham.
Yeah, and I wonder, in the roles that you've done since, and the development centres were with Gillingham, then obviously your under-18s role was with Swindon, and you've obviously had your 2-3 Lincoln, Forest Green, and Swindon as assistant manager. Is there a little bit of all those roles within you? They've all played their part in building the person that took the reins at Swindon in the summer there?
Yeah, definitely. I think that especially kind of the youth coach roles and, you know, the development kind of roles that I've done in previous positions certainly helped me now. You know, the big remit of the club is to develop young players, even at the first team level. You know, we've had 21 new signings this summer. We've had 5 league debuts. We're, I think, the second youngest team in League Two. You know, so we're trying to win games, obviously. We're trying to compete in League Two. But we're also trying to develop players along the way as well. So, yeah, it definitely helps my role now.
Mm. Were you all set to join Ben Garner at Charlton in the summer until you got that phone call from Swindon Town?
No, there'd been discussions. Nothing was concrete. There'd been discussions about, obviously, Ben wanted me to go with him. We, you know, formed a real strong working relationship, worked really well together, along with Scott Marshall. And there'd been discussions about me going with him. But like I say, as soon as I got the phone call from Swindon and for them to offer me the job, there was only, you know, there wasn't really a decision to make from there on in. But I still speak to Ben now. You know, we've still got a good relationship. He knows that it's football, you know, when presented with an opportunity as good as that, I was always going to take it.
Yeah. Again, just goes to show the precarious nature of it, doesn't it? And how things can stand on a kind of knife edge. Because I guess you've gone with him, you'd now find yourself looking for another role to add to that CV.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, sad to see Ben go, because, you know, he's a good guy and a very good manager. He's really methodical about how he works. But he's obviously, it's not worked out for whatever reasons there, but I'm sure he'll bounce back.
Do the step up from assistant to manager, can you still hang on to a lot of what you do, your personality, the culture that you help to set? Or do you have to change personalities when you become the man with his name on the door, as opposed to the man backing up the man with his name on the door?
It's a really good question, and one that that I've really thought about. I think you have to have an element of distance from the players when you're the main manager, you know, when you're the head coach. I think when you're an assistant manager, you can be in and around the lads a little bit more and understand the players more and be around them. Like I say, as a head coach, you have to have that element of distance. I've got two really good assistant coaches with me who kind of fill that role now anyway. So, yeah, it's difficult because, you know, I'm learning as well in terms of, it's my first time as the head coach. I'm 6 months into it, you know, and every week there's a obstacle that you've got to overcome, or there's a problem that you've got to overcome. And, you know, and it is a tough job, but one that I've really enjoyed.
I find myself wanting to ask you if in the new role you feel any loneliness, because clearly the immersive nature of football with your dad and then all those clubs you've been involved with and all those roles, but if you have to separate yourself off, you're not going to be exposed to the camaraderie, the kind of feel of being amongst a big group of people. Do you sometimes find yourself having to reluctantly go to the room down the corridor and pull yourself away from the group?
Yeah, I think it's quite a lonely job anyway. You know, I think it is the nature of the job. You know, you're the main man. If the results are not right, everybody's going to come for you. You know, it is a tough job. You're the one that makes the decisions. You're the one that the players come and knock on the door when they're not in the team. You know, so it's quite a lonely job anyway, you know. What I try to do is with my staff, you know, I've got really good staff around me, and we share the load. You know, we work extremely hard. We work very close together in terms of how we prepare the team to play on a Saturday against a opposition, and of course how we recover the team as well. And of course we have a big squad, so there's a lot of players who are not in the team, so a lot of work needs to go into them as well. But like I said, I've got really good staff around me who help and who are very good coaches, understand as well what we want and how we want to nurture and develop these players. So yeah, it is a lonely job, but I've got good people around me as well.
Can you be the elastic too? Because clearly what say the owner of the club, what say the chairman wants might be slightly different to the priorities of the players, to the demands of the supporters. You are having to manage a lot of different human beings there, or their expectations at least, Scott.
Yeah, but I think that's football management in general, isn't it? You know, I think every club's probably very similar. You know, I don't think we're any different. I think we've got a real clear strategy of what we want to do and achieve at Swindon, you know. We want to have a young squad. We want to have a certain way of playing, which I completely buy into. I don't think I'd have got the job if they didn't have that way of playing. It's all possession-based. We play out from the back, play through the thirds. You know, nearly every game we've played in, we've had the highest possession stats, which is really important to the football club because they feel that that's the best way to showcase our players. You know, we want to produce players along the way and obviously be a winning football club as well.
I've asked you if you feel lonely. I've asked you if you feel like a piece of elastic. Here's my other question. Have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You hesitated, mate.
No, listen, it's a tough job and it's very demanding, but I do enjoy it. Of course, I wouldn't do it if I didn't enjoy it. That's the most important factor in the job, is that you have that element of enjoyment. You know, the bits I enjoy match days. I enjoy being on the grass every day with the players. I think that's something that really, you know, really excites me about organising the team, organising the week. How does the week training sessions look? Being around the players, I really enjoy that side of it. You know, I enjoy winning. Of course, really don't like losing, you know, like I suppose every manager does up and down the country.
But I think it's a relevant question in so much as there are obviously some specialist number twos out there. There are some specialist assistant managers. In fact, funnily enough, in the sort of portfolio of various projects that I have, I do some regular webinars for the League Managers Association. I remember doing one webinar on the specialism of assistant managers, and Terry Connor's a long-standing assistant manager to Mick McCarthy, obviously. And it took him about an hour to come round the hills and dells from the question of, is it a specialist role, for him saying, no, I don't think so, till as we finished off, he said, oh, just before we go, can I say, I think actually it is. Some perhaps don't take to it as well as you clearly have.
Yeah, I think that I've always kind of wanted to, like I said before previously, I wanted to always be a number one. I think that you go through these roles that I've done in previous jobs, and you know, you put everything into what you do as an assistant or as a first team coach. You're assisting the manager at that given time. You know, you might see things slightly different to him. It doesn't matter. You just have to support him accordingly, which I've done in every role that I've been in. But you've still got to kind of have a certain ambition yourself that you want to step up and do that role. And that, I'm kind of ambitious in that way, that I feel probably I should have been given this chance maybe 5 or 6 years before this. But of course, football's not like that. It doesn't hand you stuff how you want it to. And I may not have been handed it at all. But, you know, fortunately, I have now. Better late than never. And, you know, and I'm going to embrace it and enjoy it, you know.
I can tell that you are. The final round of fixtures then before Christmas in Skybet League 2. These are all 3 o'clock this coming Saturday. All 24 teams in action at that time. Second place Stevenage head to Wimbledon. Scott Swindon in one of the games of the day. They are at Barrow. That is 4th v. 8th. Swindon a point off the playoffs currently. 7th place Bradford at home to Rochdale, the virtually season long leaders. Leighton Orient at home to Sutton United. 5th place Mansfield Town at home to Grimsby Town, another game of the day. 3rd place Northampton Town at home to 6th place Carlisle United. A 5-point gap from 3rd to 4th actually, and just a mention of one of Scott's former clubs, but Gillingham, currently bottom of the entire EFL, just 2 wins all season. They head to Stockport. Will you be disappointed if you're not? Will you be disappointed if you're not in the playoffs come the end of the season? Is that your expectation, that despite your huge churn of players and young squad, you should be there or thereabouts the playoffs come the end of the season, Scott?
Yeah, I think that I back what we've got. You know, I back myself. I back the players that we've recruited, and I feel that we're capable of getting in and around that playoffs for sure. You know, we've been kind of in and around it all season, and it's my job to kind of maintain that now and make sure that we're in and around it in the most important part of it, which is the end. I believe that we can be. You know, I think that it's a tough division. We've signed 21 new players. You know, so the fact that we're kind of where we are, I think's a massive positive already. You know, and we've just got to try and maintain that and keep in and around it. And I do believe that with what we've got in the squad, that we've got enough to make sure that we are in that playoff position, or in and around it by the end of the season, definitely.
Really appreciate you joining us. I feel like one of my responsibilities with our guests this week is to make sure you all stay on top of Christmas preparations and stuff, because obviously you've got home game against, you are on Boxing Day at home.
Walsall.
Yeah. Now, you won't forget. You will have to get the missus and take care of a few little gifts here and there and stuff like that. You're going to manage that as well as your sprawling portfolio of other interests and responsibilities you've now got?
Of course. Yeah, of course. Christmas will be eventful in this house. I have 3 children and 3 stepchildren, so 6 in total.
Wow.
So a busy house. So, yeah, they'll all have their presents to open, and I'm sure I'd have spent a few quid. So, yeah, be eventful.
I wouldn't suggest you go for a small turkey crown. I think you might need to go for the large birds and perhaps draw lots on who gets the leg and who gets the breast, so to speak.
That's it. Yeah, no, that's it. I'll be doing the cooking as well, Clem, just to let you know. I always do every year.
You are a man of many, many talent.
Many talents and master of none.
Good luck with the fixtures. Good luck with your basting. Great to talk to you, mate.
Thanks, Clem. All the best, mate.
Yeah, good luck to Scott with his turkey. That is it for this episode. A big thank you to Scott Lindsay, to Matt Holland and to Josh Brownhill. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com, podcast@efl.com. My name is Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.